Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
And now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I'll say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow now, is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast. With host Eddie Trunk.
Hey everybody, it's Eddie Trunk, and welcome to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which comes your way every Thursday. Totally free anywhere you get your podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you do not miss it. Bringing you great interviews every week with all sorts of artists from the world of rock music. And this week, a little something different, because this artist is not necessarily known for being from the rock world, but he is a huge rock fan. And if you've ever seen his performances, you know there is a very, very strong rock element to what he does. And he started out wanting to be a musician and still is to some degree. I'm talking about legendary magician, illusionist Criss Angel. And I think you're going to enjoy this conversation and hearing more about his story in the interview on this week's podcast. Before we get to it, let me remind you, as I always do, that if you are in the US or Canada and you are only listening to this podcast every week, you're only getting a tiny fraction of what I do every day on the radio on Sirius XM. All the interviews you hear on the Eddie Trunk Podcast originated from my radio show, which is live Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Volume, Channel 106. It's also on the Sirius XM app. It also replays every night, 10 to midnight Eastern. If you're in the U.S. or Canada, come on board and join me for Trunk Nation. That's the name of the show, on Volume, Channel 106, and get the full picture of what we do every day talking rock with you. This interview this week happened, about a month ago, and it happened in my Las Vegas studio, and I got to meet Criss Angel recently when I started living part-time in Las Vegas. He has been a staple on the Vegas scene for about 20 years now, currently doing two back-to-back shows at his own theater at Planet Hollywood, launched a new one recently called Amistica, and of course the original one called Mind Freak. Criss also recently just landed a new TV deal for a new show focusing on his magic, and he's just immensely successful, great guy, does some great charity work. One of his young sons recently had cancer. Thankfully, he's doing okay, but Criss has done some great work for pediatric cancer and raising funds for that as well. I've gotten to know him well in the last, few months or so. Went to the premiere of his new show, Amistica, here in Vegas, and we talk all about that. But the other thing that's interesting to the music fans is that Criss actually started out wanting to be a musician, as you're about to hear. And he still does a lot of music in his show and still has a great passion for rock music. But he started out in New York kind of at a crossroads trying to decide if he was going to go the magic route more prominently or try to become a musician more prominently. He took the magic route. It's paid off massively for him. But as you're about to hear, he still very much has an interest and dabbles in rock music and is very connected to a lot of different rock musicians. Great guy and super, super talented at what he does. And I think you're going to really enjoy hearing his story, hearing about his new show, his original show, his thoughts about magic and illusion, and of course, some talk about rock music as well. So this week on the Eddie Trunk Podcast, something a little different, Chris Angel. Enjoy. So many times, we got so many great shows here in Vegas, so many people based here, lived here. And this is a guy that made his first appearance on the show very briefly when we did the deal with Scorpions a couple months ago in Planet Hollywood at Zappos Theater. And at that time, I said, as soon as our schedules align, you got to come sit in, do a full show. And here he is. Finally, we made it all work out. Chris Angel, good to see you, bro.
Great to see you, Eddie. Thank you so much for having me on. It's crazy because I listened to you, and now I'm on your show, so thank you.
Well, you grew up in New York, right? So you used to hear me on the radio. Well, I'm still on a station in New York, but you used to hear me there on FM, right?
Yes.
Doing the metal show and all that?
Oh, I used to listen to all the metal shows from, Fingers Metal Shop to your show.
Yeah.
I was a metal head, you know, still am, and grew up in New York and moved out to Vegas back in, 2004, 2005 for Mind Freak, the television series, and never went back to New York. I still have my family there, still had some business there, but I'm not there.
For years, you performed in New York. Didn't you do the theater in Times Square, right? Which was at the time, I think, called the World. I forget.
World what. Underground Theater, which was the WWE.
Yeah.
And I went in there and I was, trying to find an opportunity because, it took me 18 years to become overnight success. And it was a challenging road. And so I saw an opportunity. I saw this like little tiny room that was a storage room. And I was like, I can make a stage. I can get like 100 people in here. I can call it the Underground Theater. And it was WWE, and I talked to the McMahons, and they gave me a shot. And I did it. I was supposed to be there for like 12 weeks. I ended up being there for, 14 months. And it was really my start. I didn't have a manager. I had nothing. I produced it myself. I borrowed money from the bank. 9/11, this is after 9/11, people thought I was nuts. And I just busted my butt. I put my hair up in a hat, handed out flyers to all the people in Times Square, tried to sell tickets, and end up doing really well there. And then I got a television special that I did. Actually, I think I did two from there before Mind Freak on
A&E. Is it the venue though that's now the Hard Rock in Times Square?
It is. It was the
Paramount.
But
that's not a small venue unless it was before they changed it.
Well, when I went in there, they had their main stage, and then they had this little like room, banquet room that they end up putting like furniture in there to store it. And then I saw it and I took that over, and then I did my show there. It was a tiny little room. My stage, like, my cousin Jimmy built the stage. It was like, 10 feet by 10 feet. It was, 6-8 inches from the ground. I was in round, and I'm levitating a girl in the round 3 feet away from people. They could touch her. It was an exciting time. Bill O'Coin, Kiss's manager, Billy Idol's manager, Billy Squire's manager,
yeah,
was a friend of mine. And I was down and out one time. I was like so depressed, and I remember sitting next to a garbage pail, and he said, "This is the best time of your life." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "The journey is far greater than the destination, and you will make it, and you'll appreciate these times more than when you're at the destination. It's a lot more difficult when you're there to remain there and to remain the most relevant." And those days, it was all about, what's going to happen next. It's like a band, you're trying to get that contract, you're dealing with all the A&R people back in the day, and then you get the demo deal, where they support a demo, and then they want to hear the demo, and then, you get a deal, and then it's just the excitement of not knowing, what's going to happen tomorrow, and then getting that bit of good news after a lot of days of bad news. It's really an exciting time, but Times Square, WWE, the McMahons were an integral part of how I became who I am today.
Well, there's an interesting story right there. So there is anybody that sets out in any path in entertainment, you got to be prepared for a lot of rejection. You got to grow thick skin. I know it from what I did. I mean, I remember being a kid, I was working in a hardware store, and I was not even in high school. And my local rock station in New Jersey, the DJ came in to buy some like nails one day. And I'm like, holy shit, there's the guy I listened to. You know, I was like 15 or whatever. And I went up to him and I said, hey man, I listened to you. And he's like, yeah, yeah. And I go, I would like to do what you do someday. How do I do that? And I will never forget it, Chris. He looked at me and he said, not going to happen, kid. And I said, I was just like, the air came out of my balloon. I'm like, what? He goes, I just can tell you don't have it. It ain't going to happen for you. He goes, stick to the hardware store. And I was just like, nothing drives me more
like me
than that. Like, tell me I can't do something. So even though I had an interest in radio and I had an interest in doing something in that, in the music field, I was like, if I don't do anything in my life, I'm going to show that guy that I can do it. And flash forward a couple years later, I started working at that radio station, and not by design, because I'm not malicious in this way, but I ended up taking a shift
really?
A couple years after
Did he
that.
Know you were the kid at the hardware store?
Yes, because we knew each other, but yes, he did. But it was just one of these deals where, like, you know, it's smaller market radio, so he was working weddings on the weekend. It wasn't like a bit, but it was just like, for me, that was like the first thing. And I know you've got to really work and have that drive. And we've only been friends for a short period of time, but I could pick up immediately when I met you that even still now, with all the success you have, two shows currently going here in Vegas every night, you still have that drive. You're not letting up on that pedal, are you?
No, not until I want to retire. I got to be number one always. Life is death without change. That's my motto, and I live by that. And I change, and I adapt, and I just got a new TV series coming out.
Yeah, congrats,
CW,
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, Magic with the Stars. So we're going to have rock stars. We're going to have some really athletes, UFC fight. I'm going to take two people in the same industry and put them to the test. And it's going to be a blast. It's nothing like it on television. CW picked it up. It was a show I was shopping. And it comes out, what is it? I think it's October 16th, a Saturday night. We'll be on at 8 o'clock. So I got a bunch of projects going on. And Kablip, my restaurant. And, you know, I'm always working.
Yeah,
man.
You are. Because you told me you only sleep for a couple hours and all that. But I want to get into all these projects and stuff. But I want to go back to the early years, and you talk about you starting out in Magic and on the street with the Flyers and begging or finding a place that'll let you do your thing and perform. All very similar things to what a rock musician does trying to get started, trying to find a believer, find a record label, find a manager, find a bill of coin at that time, get that break, get that opportunity. You had early on in your career such a love of rock music as well that you actually walked that line at the same time. Like, you one day were out there, Chris Angel, hey, give me a break from my Magic, but also with a demo tape saying, hey, I want to be a rock guy too. Talk a little bit about that. Talk about the influence of Magic and rock music for you as a kid and how you kind of chased both until you And you told me who gave you the advice to go do the Magic route. It was a guy that I know is a legendary figure in the music industry. Yeah. But talk a little bit about like growing up and having that equal love of the two things.
Well, I grew up, you know, on pop culture, MTV, you know, hard rock. And I just love that whole world. It was so attractive. Kiss, you know, we talked about that. And I wanted to do that, and I actually been doing music longer than Magic. I started playing drums when I was 6. I took 10 years of drum lessons, and then I realized, well, I can't be stuck behind a kit because I'm too big of a ham. I want to be in the front.
Right.
You know, I'm going to be the front man.
Right.
So I came up with this idea. I'm going to do Magic and music together, and I started playing in clubs. I put together a band in the 80s. There's some really embarrassing footage out there of that. And it was quite terrible, but you got to be bad in order to be good. It was Criss Angel.
Just under your own name.
Yeah, just under my own name. And I shot music videos, and I started playing the clubs. You know, I would play, you know, Lemoore's,
Limelight. You played Lemoore's?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I lived in Lemoore's.
Limelight, Frank Cariola's, whatever that was called.
Oh, The Chance?
I don't remember. It was
no,
Zone DK
Chance.
In New York City.
Sundance.
Sparks. I used to play all those places.
Now, were you out front at this point, or you're still behind the kit?
So No. I never played out in back of a kit.
So you were
the singer. I was the singer, and I would do like magic. So you'd be like watching me on stage, and next thing you know, I'd be behind you, and it would trip people out. But it needed a lot of time to develop, and I was pursuing record deals. Jim Lewis at the time, he was at PolyGram.
I know these people.
And
then
Jason Flom over at Atlantic, then Lava, Craig Kalman, Lee Lust at Capitol Records. I don't know,
Most of these people.
Of these people, and I was pursuing it. Got a couple of demo deals. I worked with a guy named Randy Cantor. In Pennsylvania, I went to studio Rough House Records out there, and I recorded some tracks there.
Were you singing?
I was.
And are you a good singer?
Then no, and probably still not. But all that experience really helped me on stage, because when you see my show, it's like a concert,
right?
And people love it. They don't sit their asses down. Everybody's up. The excitement, the energy, you know, it's just much more of that attitude. So I was able to create that music and then do what I do. And it came because back then I really wanted to do music. I really wanted to do magic. I tried to put them together and no one did that. There was no road to follow. I was kind of creating my own path. And it's much more difficult to do that. You know, if you look at the 80s or the 90s and you look at music, you see a band come out and it becomes huge. And then every label wants to copy that band.
Right.
Right. And it's just cut and paste, cut and paste, cut and paste. Well, there was no one doing what I was doing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know of anyone who's ever combined magic and rock. There's certainly been theatrical bands, obviously
Alice
Kiss,
Cooper.
Alice Cooper.
Yeah, yeah.
But nobody's
Angel.
Really... Well, Angel, which I was going to hit you with, actually, but nobody's actually done, like, where you're saying within the context of the show. Maybe there's a big open, like, Angel, for people that don't know Angel was, like, they had a thing. Did you ever see them? Because
no.
I never did either.
No.
But they had a thing where they appeared and disappeared in these boxes, right?
Like Spinal Tap.
Exactly. Did you ever see footage of Angel doing it?
No, I just remember seeing their logo, which I thought was cool because you could flip it upside down and it still said Angel.
Right.
But it had no relationship to me. My name was derived from a guy named James Randi. I had a Brookhaven public access show on Long Island that went to about 80,000 homes, and I wanted the experience, like you, to do a television show, and I wanted to do something cool, so I called it Hot Kicks, which was, you know, the 80s back in the day. I had Black and Blue on, which was Tommy
and Jamie St. James, Tommy Thayer.
Yeah, and then I had a band called Reckless was on.
Remember the name? I think they were on
they
Atlantic.
Had, like, Reckless No Frills. There was a song. And then I did a thing with Poison, I think, back in the day, and some magicians and stuff. So it was like a variety
show. So wait, this was like a public access TV show?
Yes. Yeah, like Wayne's World.
Do you have the footage?
You want to hear something really sad?
That would be awesome if you had like Poison on a show like that.
I had the footage. And, you know, I have a 60,000 square foot studio and I have a vault in there. And... You know, as you get older, you start thinking about life very differently. And I have three children now. And I was like, what are they going to do? They're not going to, no one, if when I pass on, no one's going to know what to do with this stuff. And some of it's embarrassing. So I went in there, I hired a company to come in, and I spent 3 months cleaning and throwing out 22 dumpsters worth of old tricks, old things I had, sets, tapes. And it's the craziest thing, because I was at Paul Stanley's birthday party and Tommy said to me, he's like, we were talking about it, you know, that he was on the show, Black and Blue. And I went to Lemoore's to go shoot that segment. And he was like, I'd love to see that. And I went just recently looking for it, and I threw everything out.
Oh.
Everything I threw. I have like, you know, I don't have anything with him, or I just have like, you know, 2 or 3 minutes from other shows, because I was embarrassed of my past. Now I'm not. I celebrate it. I embrace it because it made me who I am. I've learned everything from doing it. I never was taught. I never went to school. I just did it. And, you know, it served me pretty well, considering a Mystica now just opened up at Planet Hollywood. Mind Freak is the number one show in Vegas. Best-selling show. You talk about average ticket prices. You know, we it's crazy like how it evolved and transformed into the show to see. And now with the TV series. So it's like a lot of different things. So I say to anybody listening to this, whatever your dream is, you gotta live it. With life without a dream is not living. You gotta live every moment like it's your last, because you don't know how many moments you're gonna have. And so many people do what they hate. They go to a job that they hate. They're doing things. No job is perfect, but you got to do what you love.
Yeah.
And for me, since I was a kid, I always wanted to do rock and roll. I always wanted to do entertainment. And so I was blessed like you to be able to find my little niche that served me well.
But you got to work at it. You got to have that drive. It's not going to be handed to you. It's not. I mean, that I think is the common thing of people that achieve these goals, is that they don't. When there's rejection, they don't coil in the corner and feel bad for themselves. It inspires them to work harder and fuels them.
Yes.
Because that's certainly what it did to me. And I can tell that's in you, because even from those earliest years to even now, with all this success you have, these two shows and the warehouse and everything you got going on, TV shows and what have you, you're still... I
work harder at 54 years old today than I did when I was 20, 30, 40 years old. It is easier to get to the destination than to remain there. And if you want to be the most relevant at what you do, you got to work harder. You see so many bands that come out, they have one song and they kind of fall by the wayside. And then you have these bands that are around and have been around for decades. It's because they work hard. They don't rest on what they did yesterday. They don't do it. I never did this because of the lifestyle or because of money. I did it out of passion, you know, and I put the sweat equity in because it was something that I wanted, not for the reasons that some people want success. When you get success, you go out and you buy 50 cars, which I did, and motorcycles and this, and you realize it doesn't make you happy. And you realize that in Vegas, the batteries die out. So you quickly realize that doesn't really make you happy. And so for me, it's really about achieving goals and about giving back to our community here in Vegas. To my son had pediatric cancer, so it's about giving back to Cure for the Kids, Make-A-Wish of Southern Nevada, about doing things that are positive, using my success to help others. But you know, that's what I really found for me that's fulfilling.
I want to talk about some of that charity stuff too, because that's important. And I know that's actually, having seen both of your shows, I know that's also in the show itself. And I think that's amazing that you do that, and you get the word out on that. We'll touch on some of that stuff as well, because Chris does some great charitable stuff. I can tell you, in the age of YouTube, those shows that you did back in the day, somebody recorded them. Somebody put them on VHS, and somebody listening right now may right now be digitizing it and uploading it to YouTube. Because there's stuff that I'm terrible keeping our archives of stuff.
Right.
And I've got nearly 40 years of radio and TV now, and I literally have these bins stacked in my basement in Jersey. And much of it is unlabeled, and what formats it's on DAT, on mini disc, it's on
cassette
of tons of cassettes. It's on VHS, yeah. It's on laser disc, it's on, and God knows how I'm gonna do, or how I could transcribe it or whatever. I don't have the time.
Right.
So I've got this wall, and behind it are just these, I mean, there's interviews in there with people that I did, like you know, I've got an interview with Metallica when nobody knew who they
Amazing.
Were. Or I got interviews with the guys in Skid Row saying, yeah, we're bringing this new guy down from Canada called Sebastian. We're going to try him out. All that stuff in context to listen to now is so cool, you
yes.
know? And I'd love to do something with it, but I don't have the time to dig into it. But I know a lot of times when I call that stuff out, I will hear from somebody and they're like, yeah, I got it. And the next thing you know,
it's up.
It'll be up on YouTube.
All right, well, let's not do that.
Come on, man. That would be awesome to see. You, oh,
my, my hair was like up to here. It was the craziest thing. Listen, it was a crazy time. And it taught me because I used to direct my own videos. I used to do my own thing. And, you know, it. Oh, my God.
What is this? What's he playing?
Oh, I don't.
Joel's great at sourcing stuff. Did he find an old song of yours? Joel, what is it?
This is
it's Mind Freak from the Mind Freak
music
album.
Video. Yeah.
Oh, I thought he found something. I want some of the back in the day Chris Angel music.
No. We don't need to find it.
You said you embrace the past. Come on, Chris.
I do.
But I want to go back to, so if people have seen A Mystica, which I got to tell you, man, I mean, watching it, checking it out, it really is the most exciting show in Vegas. It's incredible what you're doing in that. And, I really immediately connected to it watching it because it opens with you like a scene like your bedroom and you've got two posters on the wall. You've got Kiss Destroyer, I think it's Destroyer cover, and you've got a Houdini poster. Safe to say those were the two biggest influences as a kid for you?
Absolutely, yeah.
So what was your what was the first time you saw Kiss live?
God, live, it wasn't until later. I used to like get videos, you know, bootlegs and all types of videos of them. And then obviously, you know, MTV had a plethora of Kiss videos and, you know.
But the non-makeup stuff, that was later. So you didn't see the
I was into the makeup.
Yeah.
I was into the makeup. So I used to get like magazines and, you know, their albums. But I didn't see them. I saw them like Caught in the Shade or, you know, that album. But then I saw them later. But I had a collection of videos of them in makeup back in the day.
How did you? So you're a couple years younger than me.
Yeah.
My first Kiss show was Kiss at the Garden 77.
Wow.
December 77. I was 13. And that was my first show ever. And you would have been around that time like 11 or 12. So. And then there was Dynasty a couple of years later, which would have put you in the same zone. Mm-hmm. Why did you not were you not a fan yet, or did you not have the opportunity?
No, I was a fan. I got my brother.
Was it a thing like your parents were
exactly
not down with it?
My brother, my oldest brother JD, had the Kiss Alive, you know, the live album, and I would look at that and open it up and see the smoke plums and the fire, and it mesmerized me, and I wanted to see them. So I would get magazines, you know, at that time Kiss had like magazines, they would put out comic books. It back in like probably I would say the late 70s,
right.
And but I didn't get a chance to see them, so I would see like friends would have like videos, and I would see glimpses and little footage of what they did. And it was just, you know, you could hear when you listen to that live album with the explosions and all the things that were baked in there, it just was so exciting.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that really was imagination. You know, nowadays everything's there in front of you.
Right.
Right. So your imagination is not there. Your imagination is far greater than anything, any movie you'll ever see. You create things in your mind that are much grander. So for me, I was creating these images by seeing pictures and just kind of listening to the songs, and it just really captured, you know, my attention, and I wanted to see them. But my parents, I was, you know, I was too young, and but eventually I did see them, you know,
later. But later. That's a really interesting point, and I'm sure it ties into what you do in Magic and Illusion, is imagination. That's something I never thought about till you said it, because I go back to being a kid listening to a record like Kiss Alive, and all you're having is the audio experience, right? Yep. There wasn't a YouTube. You couldn't go online. You couldn't pull up the show like you can now. Hey, let's see what they're doing before I go. So in my mind, those bombs went off in that recording. And I had this visual of like, I'm seeing the smoke bombs going up.
Exactly.
I'm like, I'm wondering. Like, so my mind created what a Kiss show was before I even actually saw one. And that's a really like powerful thing that maybe people don't have that experience anymore.
No, I remember looking at Dressed to Kill and seeing them in New York City with suits on. And every time my dad would take me to Pennsylvania with my family, I'd be looking in the streets for Kiss. You know, I remember listening to Aerosmith, Toys in the Attic. And I love that album. And I never saw them live, but my imagination, and I would imagine, and I would see pictures, and I would kind of put it together. Nowadays, everything is like, has a lifespan of a gnat, because people are, have information overload. Kids today can process information at a much higher rate. Back then, people would get 3 years out of an album, yeah. 2 years out of an album. Now you get like, what's the single? And that lasts for 5 minutes. So back then, to me, you know, it was a completely, I'm happy that I didn't experience their live show when I was that young, because for me, my imagination and how I perceived it, and you know, if there was smoke coming out of a sewer in our neighborhood, I would pretend to be Paul Stanley or Gene Simmons with the smoke. Like, right. That's the types of things that I did. And if you look at people that generally are really successful, those are the people that use their imagination as a kid tremendously. Wayne Gretzky, what did he used to do when he watched a hockey game? He would have a blank piece of paper, he'd have a pencil, and he'd follow the puck the entire game on his paper to see where the puck went. Like, unorthodox things like that. So for me, I think a lot of how I grew up and how my imagination really provoked and fueled me was unorthodox, maybe for today, but back then for me, it was totally normal.
Oh, totally. I mean, I used to... As a little kid, I would sit in my bedroom, which was covered in nothing but Kiss posters,
same thing.
Ceiling, wall, everything. It was a big moment for me because when and you can relate to this, I was, when you're that young and something so special to you as Kiss was to me, it was my whole world. I'm 12, 13 years old, my whole world. Any other band to me was not viewed as, hey, let me check them out. They could be a threat to the greatness of Kiss.
Right.
So I wouldn't let anybody in like any other bands in, even though friends would say like, hey, check out this band or that band. And then it was like a big day for me that I was realized I was evolving and opening up a little bit, because I took a little, made a little space on the wall, and I put the Aerosmith live bootleg poster up. Mm-hmm. And Aerosmith was the first thing that infiltrated the whole sanctum of Kiss that I was on in there. And for me, it's crazy because like I would listen to those records, and I'll never forget this. I had a TV that back in those days, a TV was a TV. It was a big box, right? And it had one of those antennas that telescoped out. That was my mic stand when I was listening to Kiss live playing air guitar. Yes. You know, you'd sing. And so all those moments and that imagination, I would listen to that, and I was up there playing Got to Choose and Deuce, and it was me. And then the real head fuck for me is here I am. I see Kiss 77 less than 10 years later, and I got the photo. I'm in a lawyer's office, an entertainment lawyer in New York, with my first job working for a record label, signing Ace Frehley, the guy that 9 years ago at 13 I'm seeing at the Garden, and I was just with Ace last week. So it's crazy how, like, you said earlier, you put the drive in, the work in, and sure, you lucky you get a break or two along the way, and you can really realize some of this stuff. Like, who would think me as this kid listening to Ace's solo in 100,000 years, and here I am signing him to his first deal after Kiss, like 9 years later. It's surreal. It really is when you think about it. But it is about that drive and that passion. And that's, I picked up on that so quickly. And us being from the same area, it's remarkable we didn't know each other back in the day. I mean, even Lemoore's, I grew up, God, I lived in Lemoore's. And Lemoore's was, for people that don't know, is a legendary rock club in Brooklyn where the headliner would go on at like 1:30 in the morning and you walked out and you really hoped your car was still there at 4 when you left. But did you perform there?
I did. I actually,
you know, the Parenti brothers, George and Mike?
No. It wasn't like that. It was like, I used to go and perform anywhere I can get an opportunity. So believe it or not, back in the day, because I was doing magic and had this like unique act, I'd get people from all different music genres asked me to open up for them. So I had, this is a true story, and it's not the genre of music that we're
in
the world of.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was a band called Brenda K. Starr.
Yeah, R&B, probably like a disco thing, right?
TKA, Latin Rascals, all these types of acts back in the day. And it was a kind of like Cameo, you know, like that type of music. Now, Mark Anthony, and I, Mark Anthony, the
Latin
singer, the
right?
huge Latin singer
right.
that's whatever, he and I were playing at L'Amour's together. He was playing in the band of this Brenda K. star.
Wait, what year are you talking?
Oh, God, I don't even know. This had to be, late in the 80s, 87, 88.
I don't remember L'Amour's doing anything but heavy metal.
No, they did. This was on like I guess, a certain type of night or whatever. But Mark Anthony didn't play the bass guitar. He didn't even have it plugged in. He was managed by this guy, Juan Toro, who I was trying to get to manage me, and we were friends. And I opened up doing this magic act, and he played bass guitar, air guitar, essentially, for this singer. And it's the like you talk about worlds coming full circle. You know, we laugh about that. Like, you know, when I talk to him, it's like we keep on reliving that because those were the magical days. When I used to play the rock club like L'Amour's, I did it as a magician with rock. I use like Van Halen. I use like music like that. But Long Island, the Limelight.
Sunday night was the big night at the Limelight.
Yeah, Webster Hall.
But Sunday night was the rock and roll church night.
Yes.
Did you do that?
I did not do that.
Yeah,
no.
That was the night that was like crazy in there. I went there a couple times.
I did. I played with my band in Ended the Magic at. They used to do spots at Webster Hall, and there was a big, big club, beautiful stage.
Webster Hall was the Ritz, then later became the Ritz.
Yeah, so I used to perform that. I have video of that, which is actually pretty cool. The audience was going crazy. It was great. But yeah, I used to play Long Island clubs all the time. It was a big, live band, time back then. It's like,
yeah,
it's gone.
Talk about the decision. So in your career, at some point you reach a crossroads where you're trying to do the magic thing and the rock thing and combine them and together. But then you reach a point where it's just like you get some advice to say, you know what, man? Yeah, you're pretty good at the music thing, but you go after the magic thing. You told me this the other day when we talked, where I think Jason Flom basically said you could maybe be like those guys in Vegas, Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah, he says, but a cooler version with your own music.
Right, and so talk about that moment, because was that difficult for you to kind of have to maybe backburner the rock thing and admit, okay, I'm the better path for me right now might be the magic?
Well, magic and music was something I did since I was a kid, so I love both of them. I try to do it collectively together with the band. And I started discovering as I was getting older that, music was very fickle. Music trends change. What was popular is not popular the next day. And then Jason Flom said to me, those dudes that are in Vegas have been doing the same thing for how many decades?
With the Tigers.
And they make a gazillion dollars.
Yeah.
And he's like, you should do that. You should focus more on that and have your music be a part of that. And, I was kind of still doing both. But then I said, I'm going to be hyper-focused. I did an MTV two-hour special, which was called MTV Music Video Secrets Exposed. And with Matt Pinfield, and then I did with the Misfits, we did Lunch with Jesse in Jersey.
Jesse Camp.
Yes,
I remember Jesse, the tall guy.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, what's going on? He's still around.
Yeah, so we did, and Jerry was still friends.
Wait, no, it wasn't Jesse Camp. Jesse Camp. Yes, remember his last name.
Very skinny.
Very tall, skinny guy.
But so I just said, I'm going to go for it. So I started really just focusing. Then I played Madison Square Garden. They had a Halloween attraction called Madison Scare Garden back in the 90s.
I remember that.
And I did 600 shows in like 12 days, 11 days. I did like these 14-minute acts. And so I was like the last attraction. The headlining attraction for this
Be a major thing though for
as
a guy from New York.
Yeah, I did.
Play the Garden.
Well, yeah, it was incredible, and I was doing like 60 shows, up to 60 shows a day. It was taxing to say the least. But I had the music, the CDs. We were selling the Angel Dust CDs, which was myself and Circle of Dust Clayton, and I had a band. We called it Angel Dust. We did all the music, and we performed in this makeshift theater, if you will. And it was great. And then after that, I kind of went my direction. He went his direction. And today we still do music together. He's a great guy and very talented. But then I saw this opportunity at WWE, and this is in 2001. And I also thought the McMahon's WWE, maybe I could use that as a platform because they had a Monday Night Raw. They had television shows and still do every week. And so it made sense. So I really hyper-focused on that. I got $360,000 alone against my mom's house.
Wow.
Which everybody thought we were insane. And I was very fiscally responsible and put together this show called Mind Freak, which I had no manager, no producer. I did everything. And the show was supposed to run for like 12 weeks. We ran it for 14 months, did over 600 shows. It gave me the opportunity to get three television specials, one in Japan on Tokyo Broadcasting. And then I had one on Sci-Fi and then one Fox Family Network or whatever. I forgot what it was called, but
right.
Back in the day, it's changed now. And it really launched my career. Then I met my manager from the firm, Dave Barham.
I met the other time.
Yeah, they managed Korn. Yeah. And, you know, at the time, everybody, Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese. And so he was like, if you're willing to chop your hair, because my hair was down to my thigh, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it's a funny Skid Row story, Sebastian Bach about that. He was at Webster Hall or something like that. And at one time, he'll tell the story, I met him. And, Sebastian Bach, cover Rolling Stone and big Skid Row is enormous. And I met him back in the day. And I was like, hey, I'm a magician. I did a couple of tricks. I was trying to get him to like help me out. But he was very cool. And to this day, he comes to my shows and we have a great relationship. But like, it's crazy how you were saying before about Ace Frehley, how it kind of goes full circle.
Right.
And now I have Sebastian Bach coming to my show
at
Planet Hollywood and just going crazy for it. And he came to Luxor and stuff like that. But it's very interesting how your passion and what you want and what you dream can actually manifest and be realized with time. And it's never on your timetable. It's when it's supposed to happen. But you have to put that time in. And so Madison Square Garden, WWE were all stepping stones. It was never one big break. You know how bands say it's
right.
It was never for me one big break. It was a series of things, and then the Mind Freak series just went nuts.
Your parents, needless to say, were supportive of your endeavors, given that they let you leverage their house against your career, basically. That's
yes.
A big, big move.
My pop passed away in 98, but my dad and my mom and my brothers were all, they used to help me unload the equipment going into the club Spit on Long Island, all these clubs, and they would help me and they would support me. And so, my mom said, if you really believe in this and you think you can make it happen, I said, look, mom, if this fails, I'll get 10 jobs to pay it back. I'm not going to leave the debt, with you or my brothers. So I did it. I went for it. And it was a big risk, especially after 9/11. You're talking about 2001. It was like I opened, I think it was in November or October. It was a really big risk. And I did it. Failure is not an option. For some people, like you say, coil back. For me, it's the complete antithesis. When something doesn't go, I'll figure out. And like I say, life is death without change. You got to be nimble and you got to be willing to be flexible and, change paths. You can't be stuck in your ways. Just like I am on during a live show. When you're doing a live show, anything that can go wrong eventually does go wrong. The fire alarm will go off. There'll be a fight in the audience. Some drunk person, like something doesn't work. You just got to roll with it. You got to get good at really improving. And you have to improv too with your career and your life and how you deal with, adversity and challenges.
Yeah. It's definitely, what you've done with these two shows is incredible. Again, for people listening, if you come to Vegas, Chris is doing two shows back to back. How many nights a week?
Oh, it's five nights a week. I'm in Mind Freak. So if you want to see me and you want to see a crazy evening of the craziest illusions, whether me levitating, flying around, or vanishing, appearing, doing close-up magic, that's all in Mind Freak, like the television series, but live. And then a Mystica, we present that at 9:30.
Which just opened recently.
Yeah, and I'm not in that show, but I created that show. And this show, and Franco Dragon, the guy that created Cirque du Soleil, this is the show to see. Mind Freak and then a Mystica. We get people that see both shows, you know, on the same night or two different nights. But a Mystica, if you like Cirque or you like any of the shows out here, this is like the best Cirque show to ever see.
Well, I saw it. I was at the. You were nice enough to invite me to the premiere, and as I said, it was. It's incredible because even the way the show opens. I mean that the wind. I mean you're in it in that show.
It's immersive.
It's immersive.
It has a tornado in it. It has a blizzard in it.
It's a train.
And yeah, it's the crazy. A guy's on fire.
Yeah.
Like literally on fire for like 2 minutes.
Now, when I saw it the opening night, you were in it for some.
Yes, I did it as a special.
As that was a
opening, not no more.
Okay, yeah, because yeah. We talked about that in your dressing room. I was like, you're gonna kill yourself, man, doing two shows like that back to back. But the beauty of that, if you've now you and Franco have branded it and produced it and put it out there now, is I would think that you can then take that and put it into, because you have a following all over the world. You can actually repurpose it and put it out in other places where you can't, obviously, even though you're great at magic, you can't be two places at once. So that's the way to do it, right?
Yes. Yes. This show will be a Mystica by Franco Dragon and myself will be in Vegas for at least 10 years. This show is really building a great fan base. And it probably will be an incarnation of it somewhere because I have people always coming to me. I have bands coming to me, asking me to direct videos and direct shows and create shows. So
have you ever done that for a rock band? Because, you know, going back to Angel, I don't know if it's true, but there was a story that I think it was Doug Henning back then built their illusion of appearing and disappearing, that they consulted with somebody big in magic at that time. Have you ever worked on bands staging and production and illusions?
Well, it's kind of funny that you say that because James Randi, who was worked as a consulting for Alice Cooper.
He real quickly on that, he went by the name The Amazing Randi, right?
Correct.
Now, I just watched a documentary on him that came out a few years ago.
Yes.
And his deal, if I'm correct in this, was he was big into debunking.
Yes, psychics and
stuff
mediums.
That was out. Right, that was a big point. The documentary that was done on him is actually, I'm working with that guy who did it now on a rock documentary
awesome.
Coming out. But that was his kind of deal, right? He was big in debunking the
psychics
and the people.
He kind of took over
faith healers.
From Harry Houdini. Houdini spent a good portion of his life debunking people. And when Houdini died, basically James Randi like kind of took that baton and ran with it. And he did that. He passed away, you know, obviously. But yes.
He worked with Alice Cooper.
Yes, he did. He worked with Alice Cooper on the head chopping and on a lot of different
guillotine,
things,
yeah.
The guillotine and stuff. And for me, I never really did it specifically for, like, I like Kiss, Paul Stanley and Doc McGee and Gene Simmons. Are very, very good friends of mine. And anything I can do to help them, I'm always there for. So they asked me one time to look at this upcoming tour and give them some recommendations. So they sent me some concert footage that they did, and they wanted me to kind of give them some thoughts and some creative directions and stuff. And I did. And they did a great job with it. They originally wanted me to get involved really, you know, directing and stuff like that. But I was opening my show at the time, and it was impossible to do it within a time frame. But Aerosmith, which was going to just rehearse in my studio, which they just postponed.
Steven, yeah.
Yeah, they postponed. They were supposed to be loading in tomorrow. You know, Steven had reached out to me about maybe doing something, you know, for the end of the show. So, you know, just kind of dabbling. But, you know, for me right now, I have so many different things going on
yeah.
that I'm trying to, like, 24 hours in a day is not enough. It's kind of rough. But if the right project came along, you know, I would certainly certainly consider it, because, you know, I think that, you know, magic has been used in pop and in rock, but from a different perspective. When you have a consultant, they don't really understand that culture and the music, and they don't understand what it's like to be in that perspective. You know, they're just from the outside looking in, just like a lighting designer or a videographer or, you know, whatever. I live it. I'm a guy on stage. I understand what works and what really engages. And my imagination, going back to that word, I think allows me to create things that are memorable experiences that the world of entertainment has never seen before. And I think that's why Mind Freak, you know, has played in Vegas now for what? I've been in Vegas for what, since 2008, performing live. Mm. You know, I do hundreds and hundreds of shows a year, and now with Amistica. So, you know, I love creating, and that's why I have my studio, because it's a laboratory for me to do all those things.
Yeah, yeah.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
A few more minutes left to go in the show. We'll continue to hang with Chris Angel sitting with us today, and then we'll let him get back to plotting world domination of the next phase of his career, another show or another TV thing, whatever he's got going. Let's get a call or two in real quick. Let the audience chime in a little bit. Here's Bill in Northern California. Hey, Bill, you're live on the air.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Hey. So I went and saw the Mind Freak show, I don't know, about 7-8 years ago. And great show, by the way. And you had this part in the show where you had a sweatband and you threw it in the crowd. And I believe you said it was on the third throw that you're going to do a trick with someone in the audience. So you toss it out there. Then, of course, the third throw comes right at me, and I'm like, oh, fuck, can I try it? You know, I'm thinking, can I duck? I don't know if I want to be involved in this or not. So, you know, it was going to hit me, so I had to catch it. So part of the deal was you had this box that was on a pulley way up on the stage. And
yeah, and I predicted three things, right? Three things.
Right.
And don't ask me now to do it on the radio, okay?
Right, but the last one was, what's your favorite number? And, you know, of course, my family knows this is 44, you know, sports number. And you lowered the box, and sure enough, and there was a paper that had the number 44 on it. And, of course, I was baffled, and everyone around me was baffled. But then there was these three ladies off to the left of me, and they're all, you know Chris, don't you? I said, no, I don't know Chris. Oh, come on, come free. We won't say anything. I said, no, I absolutely do not know Chris. And the one lady's all, you're a fucking liar. And I said, no. I'm not. I know that was for real. It's like, help me figure it out, you know. So these ladies did not believe that, you know, I didn't know you. It was funnier than hell. And then
so they thought you were a plant. They thought
exactly,
you were a plant in the audience.
All right. So what? Your name's Bill, right? Bill, are you going to come to Vegas anytime soon?
Absolutely.
This is what I'm going to do for you, Bill, because that was my old show. You got to come to Planet Hollywood and see my new show. I'm going to set you and your girl up with two tickets. All right?
No way.
So, yeah, I'm going to give you two tickets to Mind Freak and two tickets to a Mystica on me.
Oh,
okay?
There you go.
Yeah, so get us your information before you get off the call.
Well, I'll put you on hold.
And then I'm going to have somebody hook this up. You're going to let them know when you're going to be in town, and I'm going to hook you up with a couple of tickets, Bill, okay?
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that because we were just talking about that Saturday, and my son was talking about this incident, and he looked at me, and he's all, "So, Dad, did you talk to Chris before the show, really?" he didn't believe me after all these years, you know, he's still asking me.
All right, Bill, I'm going to put you on hold because we want to get to some other stuff.
Yeah, whoever calls in right now, I'm going to give them two tickets to both my shows as a gift. Eddie doesn't even know I'm doing this.
I didn't know I was going to do
that. I want to do that.
Neither did our phone screener. Yeah, so
is that okay?
I don't know. Joel, is it okay?
We're making it work.
Where are we going to make it work?
Let's make it work.
All right. So Bill's going to get the information right now. Real quick before we take another call, the stuff you've done and you do in magic blows people's minds, needless to say. And you've done everything from, crazy stuff with heights. And the one that I freaked out the most about is because I hate bugs. I despise bugs. I probably shouldn't tell you that now that we're friends. You'll pull some shit out of your pocket right now and freak me out. But the thing with the scorpion coming out of your mouth,
right,
just freaked me beyond belief because I'm so not a fan of bugs and things like that. The stuff, I'm also kind of claustrophobic. I don't like being in tight spaces. Stuff you've done.
I thought you were going to say the fish hooks when I hung from fish hooks from a helicopter.
Not as much. I don't like the bug stuff, and I don't like the close quarters claustrophobic. You're in water for a day and all this and shit that you've done. You mentioned this amazing Randy guy and how he debunked stuff and stuff. Where do you land on that as far as in magic? Are you a guy that will ever reveal how you do things or you don't? Like, where do you land? Like, what do you choose to keep, like, private? Or if I was hanging out with you one night, like, Chris, how the fuck did you do that? Would you show it? How do you land on that?
Depends
as
how much I
magician?
Drank. a couple of things. So for one, I'm very much against people taking people's money and saying they can communicate with the dead. That's taking complete advantage of people. And, I offered $1 million of my own money for anybody that can do that, that it couldn't be reproduced to explain how they were going to do that. And I did that on television on a show I did called Phenomenon years ago. So I'm really against that stuff. And I expose psychics and those frauds. What I do is entertainment, and that's what I do. Why can you watch how a movie is made, the movie magic, and you still want to see the movie? Because there's something more to the movie than just the CGI or their movie magic. There's something more. And I'd like to think that in my shows, there's something more there. You can know how to play a song. But you still go see the concert.
It doesn't mean you can do it the same way either.
So for me, I'm not as... Like, I have so much more to offer than, like, I'm smarter than you. You don't know how to do it, and I do. Like, that attitude, like, if you want to go see that, you go, there's plenty of magicians in town that offer you nothing more than, I'm going to do a trick, and you're too stupid to know how to do it. That, to me, is belittling and not something I'm interested in. I love my audience. I embrace my audience, and it's about having a great night. I'll never have that group of people in the room ever again in the history of the world, and it's my job to give them a unique experience and not to read a teleprompter to do it. And so, to me, it depends what it is. Would I go out willing and reveal everything? No. But in occasions and situations, if I have a sick kid that has maybe 3-4 months to live and they want to know how I levitate, I'll show them and I'll even put them on the rig, you know, like I'll do whatever I have to do. Like I don't think the secret, as Jim Steinmeier, a famous magic consultant, once said, magicians have been guarded in an empty safe. And it's true, there's nothing in there. It's how you present it, how you create the magic of emotion, which has nothing to do with the trick. Magic is just my vehicle. It's about how do I connect with you and how do I engage you emotionally? It's like a song. I can go watch a Kiss concert and I hear a song like Do You Love Me? And what does it do? It brings me back to when I was 12 years old.
Mm. Yeah, no doubt. And there's a large degree of spontaneity in your show too. The Mind Freak show, like when you call people up on stage, you can see that you're just like, you talk about anything can happen. There's a degree you're flying by the seat of your pants there.
That's
too,
fun
which
for
is
me.
Fun. Yeah, it's fun for the audience too, because you can feel that it's very legit and honest. I got to do one more break and then we'll come back. We got a bunch more calls because of course you offered them free tickets, But my Joel is texting me that because of some legal stuff, we can't do giveaways.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if we, Joel, can we give the one guy that at least Chris said the tickets?
We can't.
It's one name. We can't?
We can't.
Oh, can I just have his number and I can...
Joel, yeah, just give the
just
Chris
give
his
me
number.
His
he wants
number.
To call him and talk to him and
yeah,
say hello.
I want to say hello to him.
We'll get his number. That's
he'll say hello to the guy.
Yeah, Chris will say hello to him. We'll leave it at that.
I'm sorry, folks.
There's all like, there's an insane amount of legal... nonsense sometimes.
Well, I'll do this. Let me just do this for your fans. You get tickets to both shows and I'll do a free meet and greet with
you. There you go. But the last thing before we come back, and we will still take some calls, is the moment in your career of all the crazy shit you've done that was the most I don't know, for lack of a better term, because you don't strike me as a guy that gets scared, but the one that was the most on the edge where you felt most in danger.
Well, it's hard because I've done over 1,000 demonstrations just on...
Is there one where something went south or you're like, this ain't going the right
the thing,
way?
When I just give you a couple, I'll ramble through a couple of things. So when I levitated over the Luxor,
Jesus,
520 something feet, we couldn't test that. And, you know, people at that time had cell phones and it was shooting things. And so we kind of went for it. But it was the moment, you know, when I'm in a room like this and I'm creating stuff and I have a think tank going on and I'm writing and creating, it all sounds great. But then when you're out there alone, 520 something feet up there and the wind and the lighting and, you know, there's little moths and bats and around you and you're like, shit, if I fall, I'm dead. Another time, Planet Hollywood, I had to walk down Planet Hollywood, the wall. It was 30-mile-per-hour winds. And at the time, I was the executive producer. I had to produce that segment no matter what, because if I didn't, I would have lost the money for the camera crew and everybody there. So I would always have to make lemonade out of lemons. So I had it basically secretly, without anybody know, I had my brother tie a rope onto my ankle while I was walking on the ledge, and he stayed out of the shot. And see, I'm giving a secret away. And I was walking on the ledge, and the police and fire trucks started arriving because somebody said there was a jumper. So even though I was still going to do my bit, I got stopped because of the cops, and I'd explained, no, this is part of a TV show, and yada, yada, yada. Hanging by the fish hooks. First time I tried to do that by the helicopter, I had no pain medicine, no pain numbers, nothing. And essentially, I went up. I had to come down because I thought I was going to throw up because the skin separates from the bone.
Ugh.
And then I went up, and then I didn't realize when we planned it out that I had to have the second helicopter with the camera would create turbulence for me. So I'm flying from one helicopter on the bottom while another helicopter is next to me shooting me, and the wind is just making my skin bounce up and down. So the pain was excruciating. So there's like a lot of things that I can talk about.
When
I was buried alive.
When you went in the tank of water for 24 hours,
yes.
You landed in the hospital out of that, right?
Yes, yes.
Because what happened there?
Well, it wasn't like a major hospital thing. What happened was my skin was depleted because it never was done prior. I was like the guinea pig, and I didn't have money to test this stuff out. I jumped in my neighbor's pool for 12 hours And then the chlorine got to me, and then I jumped in this thing, and my oils got depleted, and I was just in agony, my skin. So I went to the hospital to figure out what was wrong, and they just figured that you were basically depleted, and they replenished that, and lo and behold, I was fine. But I've done a lot of really, really crazy demonstrations. I buried in cement, which killed a guy, tried to do that. He got Joe Burris, I believe his name was, and sadly he died. His coffin collapsed and he died instantly. So I did that. I did that actually one time with Rob Zombie hosting it. Rob Zombie hosted me being buried alive, and we shot it in California. But we had lots of different really cool artists involved.
I got to hit a break. But I'm just curious. I talk a lot about rock musicians as they get older and how they have to scale back what they do, or they can't do stuff like they used to, and they have to change the way they do it or retire in some cases. You're still you said you're 54, right?
I am,
and you're in great shape and all of that. But do you see a point, even at this point in your career, where there's some of this stuff that you're talking about that physically you're like, I may not be able to do that one anymore?
When I can't do, listen, the audience has spent a lot of money. They come to Vegas. They want to see me. I got to deliver 100%. If I can't do it, then I shouldn't be on stage.
Will you retire
when I can't do it. Now I still hang upside down. I'm over the audience's heads. I fire, and it's a very physical, very athletic show. I got to keep myself in shape. And I give audiences 100%. I sweat my ass off.
Yeah,
and
you do.
I'm grateful, and I just never take anyone for granted, because that audience made me. Your listeners made me who I am, and I afford this lifestyle because they come and support me, and I'm very grateful, and I want to give them the best experience when it comes to live entertainment you can possibly have in Las Vegas. Don't waste your money anywhere else. Come see me. I'll deliver.
Yeah, and it's very rock and roll. You guys know, the other show that I sent everybody to in the last year or so was Carrot Top, who I love, who does
he's
something
funny.
Totally different.
Yeah,
and
he's
I saw
a funny
him.
Guy, yeah.
He's funny as
yeah,
hell. He's been
mine,
doing
Scotty.
It forever. Friend of mine as well.
Yeah.
He's so good at what he does. And I was blown away by him, his comedy. And it's so rock and roll. And he's like us. He's got the Aerosmith logo on his stage.
Yep.
And he's so into it. And all the people I sent there, like, you're right. It's comedy, but it's super, super rock and roll. Because that's what my audience is. And I'm telling you guys, magic and illusion. Needless to say, I mean, Chris has been doing it forever. He's a legend in that
Gene
world.
Gene Simmons, Paul Stanley will tell you it's the best show in Vegas. And they have seen it. Paul has seen it many times. Gene just came and spent 2 days with me. He just saw it. And he went, you could watch it on my Instagram.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's the history
Skid
speaks
Row,
for itself.
You know, the Sebastian was just there.
Yeah, for sure. All right, a couple quick calls here, and then we got to wrap up. We got 5 minutes left to go. Here's Samantha in New Jersey. Hey, Samantha, you're on with Chris Angel.
Hi, how are you? How you doing,
hey, Samantha.
Guys?
Good.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What'd you want to say?
So I was there back in March for the preview of Mystica, and I was with my friends Karen and Kathy and Amy and a couple other people. I just want to say that the show was fantastic, and Karen and I are actually coming back out June 17th for my birthday, so we're seeing both shows, and I haven't seen a Mystica since, so I am so excited to see it again, because the show was just absolutely fantastic, and it was amazing.
Well, thank you so much. I certainly appreciate that very much.
Thanks, Samantha.
And
thank you, Samantha.
Thank you, guys.
All right, take care. Here's Anthony, also in New Jersey. Hey, Ant, what do you got?
Hi, Anthony. Hi, Eddie. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you, Anthony?
Good. I really just wanted to say how inspirational you are, not just, you know, as a person, but as a philanthropist. You know, with your Johnny Christopher Foundation. My friend Karen turned me on to you and everything you do outside of, you know, the stage and with your family. She's raised, and her students raised, so much money for your foundation in New York City. So I really just want to, you know, say thank you for everything you do for those kids that need help.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. And Karen, if it's the same Karen that's a school teacher, is amazing. She raised like $30,000, and 100% of every cent goes to pediatric cancer, because my son went through a 6-plus-year battle, and my whole life now is dedicated to helping these kids that need the dollars and the awareness to live a better, more fruitful life going through hell. So that's the goal with Southern Nevada, make a wish and cure for the kids out here and abroad.
So, and your son is okay now, right? Thank God.
Yes.
That's great. God. That is great. Thanks, Anthony, for the call.
Thank you.
Mention that, if you will. Talk a little bit about that. Let the audience know, is there a place that they can donate, they can engage?
Sure.
Because it's great work you're doing in
Thank
that
you
area.
So much. If you want to engage and see a 12-minute documentary that I made, a film about, it's very inspirational. It's called 1095. So if you look up Chris Angel 1095 on YouTube, watch it and share it. I don't want a penny, but if you want to contribute to the cause, you can go to chrisangelhelp.com. 100% of every cent I raise goes to research, treatment, and to these kids that are battling for their lives. One child every 2 minutes is diagnosed with cancer, and we must globally work together for the sake of our children who don't have a voice to give them the opportunity to beat this disease like my son did, thank God.
Yeah. ChrisAngelHelp.org?
.com.
ChrisAngelHelp. Of course, Chris is spelled C-R-I-S-S, Angel, org. ChrisAngelHelp.com. Go yeah. there for more information. And as Chris said, that documentary is available to you to watch as well. And if you go to see Chris's show, there is a segment. And you did the I forgot about this too. Our friend Dee Snider, you did a great version of We're Not Going to Take It, where Dee stripped down the
yes.
song and
He's
you're
brilliant.
On there as well.
Dee yeah. is brilliant, a good friend, and was so kind and generous with doing this music video. I had a vision to do a little video. He had an incredible version, like the Johnny Cash Hurt version.
Like a piano version
yeah,
of We're Not Going to Take
It. It was fantastic. Yeah. And I use a harp. And it's just amazing. And we shot a little music video that's included in the show, and it goes together beautifully. And Dee's a great guy.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll see it in the show if you come and see Chris here in Vegas. We'll get one more in here real quick. Max in Orlando. Go ahead, Max.
Hey, thanks for giving me a shot, Eddie. I really appreciate it.
Sure,
Chris,
man.
I've been a lifelong fan of yours, going back to the Fox days, Chris Angel Mind Freak. Looking into your history, I just want to say thank you for being an inspiration to me and for helping me get inspired whenever I'm down, bogged down by life and deal with my episodes of anxiety, depression, and just dealing with fear face forward and actually going out there to achieve my dreams and goals and ambitions. Thank you so much for that, Chris. I really appreciate that. And I hope to catch one of your shows someday, which I never have, but one of these days, you know? So,
Max, I wanna thank you for the amazing words and the kind call. Amen, brother, and I wish you nothing but success, positivity, light, love in anything you do, and always stay positive because somebody always has it worse than you and me. So we always got to be positive and live the dream, work towards it, find happiness in the things that you do.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate it. Have a wonderful day.
You
Be
too.
Well, Max. Take care. Thanks for listening. All right, we got to wrap up. Again, just so much fun hanging and hearing all this stuff. And congrats on an amazing career that's still continuing. I know, trust me, you could tell you put the work in, man. I could tell, you know, as I told you when I met you, I remember hearing about you long ago and people pounding away and, you know, they get this guy, you know, Chris is doing this magic thing and he's doing music. And I'm like, so it's great to finally, you know, get to know you in the recent times.
Likewise,
and
Eddie, thank you for having me on. And thanks to all your listeners for listening and continued success. And we're amigos.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you so much, man.
And neighbors.
God bless you. And neighbors.
Part-time,
yes.
At least for me. Great conversation with Chris. Hope you enjoyed that. It's if you come to Vegas, check out both of his shows, Mind Freak, the original show, and the brand new just launched A Mystica, which he actually is not in anymore. He produces it and oversees it. He'll come out and introduce it, but that's more of a different, more of a Cirque vibe to that show. Mind Freak is the one he actually does and does all the illusions and stuff in. So both great shows. If you get a chance, come see them. And both a very, very prominent rock and roll theme to them. We'll have Chris back in the studio again. I see him quite often when I'm in Vegas. And great guy, like I said. And great charity work he's doing. As a matter of fact, I saw him just a couple days ago in Vegas. And we were speaking. And he's working on something that would be very rock-themed with rock bands playing in December. That he wants to tie in me and my radio show to. So as soon as that gets a little firmed up and gets announced, I'll let you know. And it will also be for his charity for pediatric cancer, which, again, is just a tremendous cause. So I hope you enjoyed Chris Angel's story and bringing you something a little different. Obviously, a guy very passionate about rock music, but has made his name in doing magic and two shows like 6 days a week in Las Vegas at Planet Hollywood. Thanks to Joel Pollack for producing the podcast. Thank you guys all for listening. Again, please join me if you're in the U.S. or Canada for Trunk Nation live on Sirius XM Volume 106 every day, 2 to 4 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. Nightly re-airs 10 to midnight Eastern, and full shows, interviews, and more on the Sirius XM app. Be sure to join me for the live show every day here on the podcast, getting a little taste every week of what I'm doing there. Have yourselves a great week. Hope to catch you on the radio. If not, next week, back here next Thursday for another all-new episode of the podcast. Take care.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.